And welcome to No Filter Sports with Eli Zarin. I'm your host, along with Bob Page, coming in from Florida, as always today, and Denny McClain, my former TV and radio partner, now joined again in the No Filter podcast. I'd like to start, guys, I guess with what you'd call the cultural phenomenon of the NFL. And today, we're taping this or recording this or making an audio file on January 28th, which is now called Media Opening Night. It used to be Media Day during the day where literally thousands of reporters from all over the country would descend upon wherever the stadium is and do interviews with the football players. Now it's become a TV show on the NFL Network and I believe on CBS Sports Tonight. 7 o'clock, we'll hear from the Rams, and 9 o'clock, we'll hear from the Patriots. So, Bob, did you ever cover a Media Day for a Super Bowl? And
Are you kidding me? Many media days for Super Bowls. I covered like 4 Super Bowls. And I'm glad that you're asking me this question, that you brought this up, because my young colleagues in our business are always amazed when I tell them the story of the first Super Bowl I ever covered and about Media Day. There weren't very many people there. And I will always want to do my one-on-one interviews. So I just asked somebody, I said, where are the Niners staying, by the way? This was in Detroit, of course.
Oh, okay, 81 so, you're talking about. Okay, yeah, 1981.
Yeah, the Cincinnati-San Francisco game. So I said, where are they staying? And somebody told me one of the hotels out by the Silverdome. So I said, okay. Went out and got in my car. I beat them there by a little bit. 49ers team bus drops them off. Here they come in the hotel lobby. I saw Joe Montana. I walked up to Joe and I introduced myself, told him who I was, what I wanted. He said, sure, not a problem. So I sat down with Joe and did about a 5 or 6 minute one-on-one radio interview. And then the coaches were late coming off. And there was Bill Walsh. I came up to Bill Walsh, again, explained who I was, what I wanted. Can I do an interview? Sure, not a problem. Sat down for 5 minutes. The young people today, when they see what a circus Super Bowl media has become, are shocked that we had that kind of access to players and coaches many years ago. Now, it's a joke. You couldn't pay me enough to get me to go to one of those Super Bowl media
days. What the hell is wrong with you guys? This is entertainment. It's supposed to be guys jumping up
and
down and making
answers out of
themselves.
Nobody feels a question. Try to get a word in edgewise.
I totally understand. But you know what? Some of these players really have a good time with this. They get dressed up in different clothes. They don't come out in football uniforms. You remember a couple of years ago they said they couldn't wear a certain clothes item? I don't know if it was a shirt or a cap or something. And half the guys came out in not only caps, but everybody had a different cap on.
I'm kind of with Denny on this because, Bob, nobody feels sorry for what the media people have to go
through. That's
true.
Nobody
cares about that because they don't want to have.
I'm just talking about from a reporter's standpoint, because you asked me if I'd covered Super Bowl media days. It's no fun.
But that was a simple yes or no,
anybody. Well, I mean, there's just so many people gathered around these little stanchions where the players and coaches are sitting. It's just for a reporter. It's not fun anymore. Bob, and that's what you asked me.
Bob, that was
yes,
the
sir.
Question was a simple yes or no.
No. Well, listen.
Yeah.
No.
Well, initially it was. Have I ever covered a Super Bowl media day? Yes.
A lot changed.
That's like the German guy. German guy's walking down the street. Guy comes up to him and says, excuse me, sir, do you have a light? He goes, yeah, and walks right past him.
Well, you're right. 81 was different, Bob, because it was cold here, and that was 5 years before the first one that I covered that was very different, and that was when the Giants played Denver. I was in New York then, and it was a zoo by 1986. We were all lined up at a fence, hundreds and hundreds, probably 600 or 700 reporters. They open the fence, and then you just go in, and it's a free for all. And then you'd have like the girl from MTV asking a player, if you were a dog, what breed would you be? Yeah. And, crazy questions
and
like that.
And that drives you crazy too. Now it's Super Bowl media
and
day.
Let me compare it to way back 50 years ago to the Tigers, their media day that they had in St. Louis. And it was crazy. Also, Norm Cash winds up showing up in his underwear. I mean, then when he went back in, took his underwear off, and those were the days some of the women in the media day get into the clubhouse. And I'm telling you, there were a lot of new things featured in that clubhouse that day.
You would have been fantastic on that. And it's unfortunate that my first year in the business was 74. And so they invited me down. You can't imagine how thrilled I was to cover Detroit Tigers Day in April of 74.
Sure.
And I get down there, and the first thing I do, I want to talk to my boyhood hero. Damn it. I'm so thrilled to meet Al Kaline. Kaline's alone. It's supposed to be media day, right? He's stretching on in left field. I walked up to him and said, "Al, you know, my name is Bob Page from Channel 6 in Lansing. Can I do an interview with you?" And he says, looks at me, goes, "Not now." I said, "Oh." So I walked away, and about 20 minutes later, Kalen was walking back through the crowd. And I saw him, and I said, "Alice, anyway, we could do this now?" And he looks at me like I'm dirt under his feet. He says, "Yeah, I guess so." So the first question I asked him, I said, "Al, you know, you're one of the greatest right fielders in the history of baseball, but this year you're going to be a designated hitter. You have to miss playing the outfield." He looks at me and says, "No, I don't have to miss it, and I'm not going to miss it." I said, "Whoa, welcome to Detroit Tigers Media Day." And what they say? Never meet your heroes.
I'll tell you this: you should have called me before you interviewed him. We'd have given you a line of questions, because that is not that's not a good one to ask.
Well, I have two on that. Now, in 1975 was the first year that I ever covered sports on a regular basis. I was at a radio station WABX, kind of underground radio, and so
It was the greatest underground radio station in the history of America. It was an amazing station.
Anyway, since Denny brought up 68, so by 75. Most of the 68 guys were gone. You still had Willie Horton there, and you had Stanley, and I'm trying to think who else, but Freehand was still around.
Lolish was there in 75. I'm sure he was.
Anyway,
more or less, they kept guys that had been born and raised in Michigan.
Yeah, and you're right. And at the end of their careers,
Freehand, Northrop, yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so my story is this. So I see Gates Brown, my first spring training. After about a week, I say, "God, is this boring?" But most guys are, you know, they're trying to make the team. They're sprinting in the outfield. They're doing wind sprints. They're playing pepper. They're doing batting practice. They're running here and there. They're working on pitches with coaches. And Gates Brown, his last year, he's standing, kind of leaning on his bat at the batting cage and not doing anything. No running, no stretching.
And that's typically Gates.
No, nothing. He's just leading, and he's talking to guys. He's laughing.
Well, what did you do in spring training?
So, let me finish.
I stood in center field and did nothing.
Let me finish the story, please. So I go up to him. I'm kind of nervous. I'm a new reporter, and I want to ask him why he's doing nothing. I don't know how to do it. Finally, I say, I'm Eli Zarin from WABX. Do you have a minute? And he kind of looks at me quizzically, like he's never heard of the station. And what do I want? And so I kind of warm up a little bit, but still he's kind of standoffish. And I go, "So Gates, I see you're really having a good time hanging out at the cage, but you're not really very active. What is your philosophy on spring training?" And he looks at me and he goes, "You want to know my philosophy on spring training?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "I like to start slow and then taper off."
You know what? My first spring training for Channel 7 covering the Tigers was 1977. And I had read that when where you guys stayed in the old days, the legendary Holiday Inn Central in Lakewood.
Oh, God
that Willie would actually run from the Holiday Inn Central to the ballpark to make sure he got in shape. Now, I was a runner.
That's true.
That is crazy.
This is one of my heroes.
It's like the other story about him getting in his uniform and getting in the back of a pickup truck when we had the riots in Detroit and having the whole town calm down because he's running through the city.
That's
in a
different,
truck.
Denny. No, this
I
is
mean,
the.
Come on.
Wait, time out. I told you, I started covering spring training, and Willie was there the first
time. You saw him running.
Yes, he would put on this rubber suit and run to lose weight.
You're stealing my story.
Yeah, okay, but it's true. I'm just trying to
say.
You tell the story. I'm verifying, Denny. It's true.
Go ahead, Bob. I'm sorry.
So what happened was I was a runner, you know, and I thought, well, what a great shot it's going to be for Channel 7. I'm going to run over from the hotel to the camp with Willie. It'll be great. And I thought to myself, are you kidding me, man? This is Willie Horton, one of the heroes of my childhood. I'm going to be embarrassed by this. This guy's a professional athlete, for goodness sake. So I decided not to do that. And we got a little truck, and the cameraman and I and the sound man stood in the back of the truck, and we shot Willie running next to the truck. As Eli just said, he was wearing a wetsuit, and I swear, every 75 feet he had to stop. He was totally winded. He couldn't run more than 75 feet at a time. And I thought, oh, my God, he would have been embarrassed had I run with him.
Well, the thing about Willie is, I mean, I went to 10, 11 spring trainings with him, and I can tell you this. Willie was not a fan favorite of running. He hated running. We all hate running. and unless you're going to be a miler of some kind. But our guys never ran. Gates, are you kidding? The only place he ever ran was to get a couple of hot dogs before the game started, and Willie would try to get one of them. But the bottom line with Willie was he – if this was true, and I believe you, I believe he ran from the hotel to the ballpark. Well, that was a long way.
What he was doing, though, the theory, which shows how primitive training techniques and knowledge was, he was just trying to lose some weight, but it was all water because he couldn't breathe in the thing. It was impenetrable, you know, rubber, so he sweated like a pig, but you just drink water. It's not getting in shape. So it was misguided in the first place.
That was one of those
lack of knowledge.
That was one of those bad goods that they sold us. Wear those rubber suits, boy, you'll lose a lot of weight. I mean, you will lose 5 pounds a day, 10 pounds a week, 20 pounds a month.
Nonsense.
Nobody lost a pound.
You drink it back. It's water.
And Danny, how about the worst bill of goods you as a pitcher were ever sold? When you were pitching, let's say, in the mid-60s in August, and it was a miserable hot day, what did the team doctors and trainer tell you? Take salt tablets. Unbelievable.
Yeah,
they actually believed in that.
Well, this just go back another second because you mentioned the Montana thing. It was a different Super Bowl because it was freezing cold in 1981, and Montana wins the MVP award. And the next morning, I'm doing the noon news at Channel 4, and they send me to some hotel in Dearborn where Montana is going to receive his car. I go there, and I'm the only reporter. I do a live shot with Joe Montana. He couldn't have been more gracious. And I'm looking around. Nobody else was there. They either covered them the day before after the game. And it was just a different time.
Those were the days of covering sports. You're right. People don't care what we have to go through as reporters or journalists to get a story, what we have to put up with. But just from our standpoint, those were the days of covering sports.
Well, not only that, but the players had a little bit more respect for the reporters, too. That all that respect is out the window.
This is from a guy who dumped a bucket of water on Free Press writer Jim Hawkins.
Well, the only thing I can tell you is it should have been urine. Now let's catch up with the
not yet with what I don't want. We started with the NFL and with a bunch
of
ADD old guys we get pushed aside, so go ahead.
At one time, the bucket did have some urine in it.
Okay, enough already. Where do you want to go here?
All right, where I want to go is I want to bring everybody up to speed what's going to happen with this lawsuit in New Orleans.
Okay.
And I pulled out the legal language that the NFL has in their on their tickets, which is implied. And it says...
And the lawsuit is...
The lawsuit is...
To get the game played.
They want the game replayed. And by the way, the commissioner's got the power to do that, but that will never happen. And what the legal standing is, a ticket to a game is a revocable license that grants you access to a sports venue and lets you sit in your seat and use the stadium facilities. Effectively, fans are not entitled to anything else. In addition, that license may be revoked by the team. So bottom line is, there's not a chance in hell. Because one of us said on the show the other day that let's see what happens to the lawsuit. That lawsut is going to be dismissed as soon as the judge says, court in order.
Denny, you had a great show on WXYT in Detroit. Kicked ass in the ratings, made money for a long time. That was then. That was live radio. We are recording this show on a Monday, and by the time people hear this, this lawsuit you're talking about is going to be ancient history.
The show's going to be on today.
By the way, Bob, when people... download our podcast. They know what date it is.
This lawsuit's going to be,
but the show's
going to already has been.
And our show's going to be on today.
Yeah.
Some people will hear it today.
Bob, what are you drinking today? I want some.
Right now, H2O. You guys can see that via Skype. But I'm going to do, because of you, Danny, I'm going to go add some doers to this very short.
God bless
you. Get through the rest of the program.
God bless you. Who are you going to do?
Anyway, the cultural phenomenon that we started with also, this includes the halftime show, and it's really shows how the politics are everywhere and how this halftime show has become a political hot potato. Now, when Trump was inaugurated, I thought was interesting. A lot of people turned down the opportunity to sing on the show or to be part of it.
Right.
Instead, I think they got Three Doors Down and Lee Greenwood when everybody else turned them down.
Yep.
That's political. But now, obviously, the politics is in this, too. And with this cultural phenomenon, and so now the NFL, who can we get? Who's going to sing? And, you know, I don't know much about Maroon 5, But it seems like
I don't know anything about Lee Greenwood. He's some kind of a country guy, right?
Yeah, he had.
He's the one that said,
"God bless the USA."
God bless the USA. That was a huge song.
I missed that one somehow.
Yeah. Huge song.
Yeah, Maroon 5 is very big among Gen X's and Gen Y's. It's a big band.
Okay.
Yeah, they've been around for quite a while.
A lot of people turned it down, and I guess the most prominent was Jay-Z, who said he had a single last year where it said, "I said no to the Super Bowl. You need me. I don't need you." So, but it still
what
is
a tragedy.
And one
I
thing
got
to
all
add.
The CDs and albums right behind me over here in my record case.
And you know, one
I
thing,
won't be able to hear Jay-Z. This is just awful.
Yeah, but one thing to add to that. You know what? I think if you get invited to the White House, you go. Just because of the office, not because of the guy in there. I mean, I'm not a fan
of his. I know what you're saying. I'm not sure I agree, but I know what you're saying.
We all have a great amount of respect for the White House and for the president's position. Not for the president necessarily, but we do have to put it in proper perspective.
We have to.
Yes, but everything's different. Everything's a little different.
Everything is crazy right now.
With this polarization right now, where and obviously most performers or artists, I'm making a generalization, lean farther left than right. And so if you don't need the tremendous exposure in front of 100 million people, that's a career-defining moment. Now, in the eyes of those that don't need that, it's a career I don't know what moment it would be. But
now remember where this thing got started. Brandon, our producer, I'm probably going to need your help with this because I'm having a senior moment, which happens frequently. But our goalie from Flint, Michigan, from Davison, who backstopped the Bruins to a Stanley Cup a few years ago.
Tim Thomas?
Thank you very much, Brandon. Tim Thomas, yeah. So they were invited to the White House, and because apparently Tim Thomas is some kind of far right-wing nut, he announced that he's not going to the White House to meet Barack Obama. I guarantee you that much, and he did not go. So this goes back quite a while. It's not just Trump.
And my point is still good because, number one, yes, you still have the right in this country to say no, but it shows so little respect for where we live, people sacrificing their lives, going to war for us, and that's not exactly the proper, appropriate way to treat the country. That's all.
Yeah, well, right, and if you want to make a political statement, I guess it is, and I guess your point is, which is valid, why use sports to make a political statement?
Right.
You're just going
I
to
agree
the White
with
House.
You. It's like the Kaepernick. That thing has gone on way too long.
Yeah, that's why I think this halftime thing is kind of a blown. You know, the NFL lost me for good, by the way, with the whole CTE thing. I can't. I guess I understand why institutions deny, the Catholic Church denied, you know, all that was going on. And despite how many billions of wonderful Catholics there are in the world, the organization was corrupt in that way. And I think it's kind of, you know, with the NFL, I feel that way, too. After the CTE thing, denying the money to the $1 billion to these players who are ruined for life, to pretend that it didn't exist is a disgusting display by a corporation. That set aside, you know, let's go for the entertainment. It's otherwise a brilliantly marketed league.
Yeah. By the way, the NHL has done that, too, under Gary
Bettman.
It's not just the NFL.
Worse, yeah.
The NHL has swept the whole concussion issue under the rug.
And you'd think that after the NFL reluctantly, after hiding it for years, has to admit that there is a connection. When they look at the brains of 200 guys and all 200 have CTE that played, after that, to then be the NHL and say, no, it doesn't happen. It happens there when they get hit in the head, but it doesn't happen here when they get hit in the head is just ridiculous.
Now, you just mentioned this in passing right now, and I think some of our listeners are probably confused because you didn't really say much more about it. The Colin Kaepernick thing regarding this year's Super Bowl is a lot of artists – especially African-American artists, have turned down a chance to perform at halftime in protest over the fact that Colin Kaepernick does not have a job. So that's what that's about.
Right.
And there was some idiot woman who wrote a piece in USA Today, which the Detroit Free Press reprinted this week, talking about this whole thing. And she actually said, well, you know, Atlanta has an awful lot of African-Americans living there. You can even call it a black town, I suppose, if you wanted to. And she says, as a result of that, we should have rappers doing the Super Bowl halftime show. And she named about 15 or 16 of these people. I don't know what rap has to do with music, by the way.
I don't either.
But she named about 15 or 16 of these people, none of whom the three of us old white men had ever heard of, I guarantee you, or very few, who she feels strongly should be the quote-unquote entertainment at the Super Bowl.
That's just naive, obviously, and I don't blame her, but the fact that the venue is Atlanta doesn't matter. When people are watching on TV, the Super Bowl could be played on the moon. It's the game.
And Atlanta's a great city. I mean, they have
great
come,
city.
Great city. I mean, you can't find a better city in this country than Atlanta.
The only place in the South that I would ever live, because you know what?
Atlanta's
got nothing to do with the South. It's very cosmopolitan.
Yep.
People live there from all over the country. I've spent a bunch of time there, and you go a lot of places, you don't hear people speaking with a Southern accent a lot of the time.
Yeah, and I played ball there my last year in baseball.
Sure you did,
and
of course.
Then we lived there a couple, 3-4 years after that. We had a great time there, just a super, super
now,
time.
What,
and
yeah.
I was there when that transition was being made from the deep South to moving into the middle, mediocre environment, then finally it's a northern city today. Listen, I got one more thing.
Before we leave the lady that wrote to the Free Press, in fairness, what the NFL could have done to honor Atlanta was to say, hey, you know, there's so many great rappers from Atlanta, the whole music business here. And by the way, I haven't heard of any of these guys. Migos, Young Jeezy, Childish Gambino, Two Chainz, Gucci Mane, Young Thug, 20, I don't know who any of these people are. But they could have picked some kind of middle of the road, medley of stuff that at least had a little melody to it, et cetera, but they didn't.
Like Frank Sinatra or somebody like that.
Yeah, right.
Listen, one other
Frank,
thing.
Frank won't be able to make it this year.
Probably not. He is tied up deeply.
Yes, he is.
One other thing in the NFL. Since the season ended somewhere towards the end of the season and now, 8 black coaches have been fired, all replaced by white coaches. The NFL is back to exactly where they were a couple of years ago with this black and white issue, and this thing will explode sooner or later.
I saw about a lot of black coaches being fired. I did see that. I haven't heard that they were replaced by 8 white coaches, but you probably are right. I have no reason.
And they did a big expose on this last night on the CBS News. That's where it comes from.
It's 2019 now.
Yep.
I would hope that we look at a coach as a coach. The guy's either a good coach or he's not. He deserves to be hired. He deserves to be fired. We got to get past this nonsense about skin color at some point.
Are you saying that let's ignore it because they're just picking the best coach that they feel they know?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay, so you're making it a political issue that they're
no.
That they're
I'm not making it political. No. What I'm saying is the NFL. They're going the wrong way again. They're going to have this thing, and I don't think they meant to make it a political issue, certainly not. But they're going to create another political issue.
So they need to be politically correct and make an extra effort to hire minority coaches.
Absolutely. At this point in time,
don't forget the Rooney Rule. Well, these jobs you're talking about, Denny, that have been filled, they had to interview minority candidates for those jobs before filling them.
Absolutely.
So it's not as though they're not paying attention.
No, they're paying attention, and I'll guarantee you they're interviewing every black guy they can find. But the bottom line is you still have to qualify to be a head of a football team or a baseball or basketball team. That should be the number one criteria.
Or a hockey team.
Hockey team.
And the lack of black coaches in the NHL is something that really is disturbing to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so Super Bowl 53, it should be a wild week of entertainment, et cetera. And I guess politics, too, are still caught up in there. Okay, let's put – oh, by the way, 5 million people – this is what's interesting because you and I, the three of us, wouldn't have even thought about doing this show 4 or 5 years ago. We didn't know what a stream was other than – water that
the hell
goes.
We didn't. I used
no,
to
I know
them all the time.
Well,
what are you
I know.
Talking
and,
about?
And when you have prostate issues, the stream becomes very important as well.
Does it that, ever?
That's...
Now, you're talking to a bunch of. Now, here's our producer again, Brandon. He's sitting there. And at his age, the kid goes, prostate issues. What does that
the hell
mean?
Is that
they
mean?
Don't know yet,
Brandon,
but they're going to find out.
Brandon, we're not talking about catching trout either.
Okay. No, Brandon, we know. You pee twice a day for 3 minutes at a time. We pee 40 times a day for 10 seconds at a time. Just a whole different way of living your life. But anyway, where was I now? You want to move anything else?
Let's do the Detroit Tigers.
Last thing about the NFL. I was thinking about Gary Cavalletto, the guy that blew the call last week. And one night I'm just sitting there and I think, well, what is this guy going through? He missed the obvious pass interference. It made a difference. Now there's a lawsuit that you brought up earlier to replay the game. It's all because he, in doing something he'd done thousands and thousands of times, blew a very simple play in front of him, and nobody covered for it. And you go back, Bob wrote an email this week where he mentioned C. Denkinger Don, who blew the 1985 World Series when he called
Jimmy Joyce in the perfect game in Detroit.
But yes, except that was just a regular season game, nothing game.
And by a 500 pitcher.
Right.
I mean,
or less than that.
It was out of the big leagues, in 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
Bob Feller.
I was making this point, Danny. He takes me to the Tigers' annual golf outing, every now and then in suburban Detroit.
I take
June.
Oh, you do?
So anyway. You're not invited to. Go ahead.
I don't play golf, but Eli does, and I ride with him in the cart. We have a great time kibitzing with the guys and watching him play golf. So we're this thing had just begun last year, and we look over to the right, and there's a golf cart with two guys and another one, two guys, and all of a sudden they're racing like hell to get off the course. And the round just started. I said, "What's up with that?" Eli says, "You're going to see that all day long."
I don't get it.
They're racing to the bathroom.
It's
just an emergency.
The stream.
Issues.
Anyway, yeah, he called Denkinger called Jorge Orta save at first, and that led to a 2-run rally. The Cardinals would have won the game in the World Series. They had a 1-0 lead. Instead, Kansas City gets a couple of runs, starting with that awful call at first base where he was really like safe by three feet. And later, Hal McRae said of the Royals, he said, "If that doesn't happen, we probably don't win." So it took him 13 or 14 years of abuse of people.
Denkinger goes to card shows like Bill Buckner does, and he's delighted to sign pictures of his blue call at first base, like Buckner's error.
Small consolation for the pain he's been through.
Yeah, Don's 82 now, and he's accepted this very, very well. So it just these are things that happen. The thing that I find disturbing, which you didn't mention about the NFL official who blew the call in the Rams-Saints game, this guy also, like a lot of other officials, Gene Steratore notably, does basketball in the wintertime. Oh. He did a basketball game the other night. They booed him out, tried to boo him out of the place.
I didn't know
that's basketball ridiculous.
Yeah. Whether there guys have died for this. The Angels' Donnie Moore gave up a home run. When you do something in a public venue like that, Bill Buckner, it lasts for life. So I'm just feeling bad for the guy. He made a simple mistake with the spotlight on, though. If their pass had been to the other side of the field and he'd hit the guy, nobody would have noticed. So it's a shame. I'm just showing my empathy and my sympathy for a fellow human being.
Denny McClain gave up a lot of home runs as a pitcher. How would Denny McClain like it if everybody went, "I remember when Mantle hit her, when this guy." Denny McClain was 31-6 in 1968. That's what people remember about Denny McClain.
Right.
He was a great pitcher. How horrible if they stopped you. "Oh, I remember that amazing home run you gave up to Roger Maris or whatever and what year it was."
How does that compare to the situation?
Jimmy Joyce was a great umpire, and that's what Jimmy Joyce is known for in retirement now. One blown call in what would have been a perfect game. It's too bad.
And by the way, I read some kind of a rating system that they use in Major League Baseball. The average umpire misses 4 to 8 pitches a ball game on balls and strikes. Listen,
not true.
If that's
not
all
true.
They
it's
miss,
much more than
they
that.
Are
it's
miracles.
Much higher than that.
Listen, I read it and I couldn't believe it. I almost picked up the phone and called the commissioner. Yeah. I said, "Why do we want to lie like this, for God's sakes?" That was ridiculous. Speaking of baseball,
go ahead,
Mr. Avila, our general manager of the Detroit Tigers, the genius himself, in the front office with the Detroit Tigers. The other day, before this fun fest started with the Tigers, Tiger Fest.
Otherwise known as the Caravan, right? The Caravan going out there.
As the Caravan, he said, "Our ball club sucks. Our ball club is lousy. Our luck is no good at all." And the reporter said, "How can you say that?" He says, "I'm being honest."
Right.
"Because how do you hide this?"
Right.
"This morning, Mr. Avila says, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel." That's what he said this morning. Now, was he lying the other day or is he lying today?
Today.
Bob Arum. What a clean. Eli knows that very well. Arum stands up at a press conference, a boxing press conference years ago. The reporters accuse him of lying. And Arum says to the media, the assembled media, he says, "No, yesterday I was lying. Today I'm telling
you the truth." Well, I was going to say, you can't have it both ways with Avila. He was being honest. He said, "How can you hide this?" He admitted it may take 4 years. Well, I would think that his bosses say, whoa, honesty, we got to sell tickets this year. You go make up for that and say that it's happening faster. So, go ahead.
I'll make a suggestion. He may be lining up another job somewhere else, too. I mean, because you can't stick
around. Yeah, he's
around.
Done so well in Detroit. Yeah, he'll be a hot ticket.
He hasn't done well anywhere. There's never been any place he's done. He's never run a club.
No, but he's a great scout. He was a great scout.
Oh, great player. Who did he scout?
Miguel Cabrera.
Tonto?
Miguel Cabrera.
Everybody scouted Miguel Cabrera.
He was only 16 years old. He spotted Miguel Cabrera.
But everybody scouted him. He, you know what? That was the best player in the last 20 years to come out of being scouted and traded for.
Well, we don't really got it. In fact, I had a list of the guys that he traded for.
Way,
I got the.
You guys just said, you guys said his bosses. He's got, remember this, he's got one boss, one, and that's Chris Hillich. And my personal belief is that he has tried to cover Chris Illich's butt by constantly denying that Illich told him to get rid of all the Tigers' top players in a fire sale. Avila has taken all of that heat on himself, and I don't believe that that's what happened.
There isn't anybody in this town that believes that, Bob.
What do you believe happened, Bob?
I believe that Chris Illich told him to cut payroll. And Avila has taken the fall for that.
There's no way anybody would believe that. Nobody. Nobody's going to dump the kind of money here without permission from God. And Chris currently is God with the Detroit Jets.
That's what he says.
Absolutely. That's
so you're agreeing with him. He's strictly following the boss's orders.
Well, that's what I said.
Yeah, okay.
But
okay.
Bob said that Avila is trying to cover for Chris. No, Avila's not covering
because
for him.
Because Denny, he's fallen on the sword.
No,
every
but
time they
all,
ask they, Avila
listen,
if they, he's under orders to do this, he says, oh, no.
But they
I
all
never
sat down at the same
excuse
me. They all sat down at the same conference table, and they all agreed, cut the salary, get this guy, cut this guy, and if you can, get rid of Cabrera. And let me tell you, I still think he's going to go, but you need somebody to buy half the money.
Well,
that's the problem.
Well, we touched on this, the three of us touched on this the other day, but we did not go into this. And if I can do that right now and upset your little apple cart here, we didn't get into specifics, such as the kid we got from the Cubs. His name is Jaime Candelario. It's
Candelario.
Not Jaime Candelario.
The kid
we got from the Cubs,
yeah.
He's a 220 hitter. With a little bit of pop, a 220 hitter, and a mediocre third baseman. We had Nick Castellanos already at third base. We had to move him to right field to make room for a guy we did not need, and Nick can't play right field.
That's for sure.
He's taking a hit for the team. You can go up and down on the list of these kids that Avila has brought in, and we can discuss, if you want to, every single one of them and give our pros and cons.
Well, I can tell you this. I was in eastern Pennsylvania with Kaline when he was working out, Castellanos, when they were trying to move him to the outfield. And after 2 days or 3 days there, he told Kaline walks up to me. He says, man, am I tired. I said, what? I said, I don't think he's caught a fly ball in 3 days.
Yeah. Well, Kaline's had.
And you know what? This is part of the old Sparky Anderson school. And I know you guys remember that. Sparky Anderson school of thought. If you have a Major League Baseball uniform on, you can play the outfield. Hence, Marty Castillo goes to right, you know, and starts losing balls in the sun and everything. I mean, Sparky just felt Howard Johnson goes to left field and embarrasses himself. It's, you know, I mean, come on.
Well, you know, when you look at the 40-man run, okay, now, perhaps the guys that they traded for, and Candelario's still young, and I know he's the only one that's made it to the major, so imagine how far they're behind all the other guys are. But you look, Verlander got a Franklin Perez, at least he made the 40-man roster. The other guys we haven't heard of, Daz
hurt
Cameron.
Hurt all year. We've never even seen the kid throw. Betis. He was hurt all last year, all season.
J.D. Martinez. We got Dawel Lugo. Sergio Alcantara. He is on the 40-man roster. We don't know if he can play.
He doesn't
or not,
impress
though.
Me.
We don't know if he can play. Kinsler, we got two prospects.
That was the worst trade we made, getting rid of Kinsler.
Yeah, Ian's clearly on a downside now, but you're right. I love Ian Kinsler.
He was a leader. He wanted to play every day. He was aggressive.
All-around player.
Oh, man.
Great all-around player.
Best player. A best everyday player we had here for a very long time.
And, you know, you see guys that are still here, and they don't fit anymore, because when you see that you're getting rid of Jose Iglesias, who's going to make $6 million a year, for a guy named Jody Mercer, who can't play as well. They bring him in for $5 million a year. So it's like this complete dump.
Yeah, they just let Iglesias go. They didn't bring Jody Mercer in for him. Whoever Jody Mercer is, they signed him to take his place.
Well,
are you kidding me?
Because Kendall,
you're looking at maybe the best defensive shortstop in baseball. You just let him walk and bring in somebody named Jody
Mercer?
Exactly.
Well, and here is the philosophy. It's complete dumping of all salaries, and Iglesias was a free agent.
$6 million a year. Is that a lot of money in baseball?
But they would have had to sign him for multiple years, probably, and they didn't want to take that chance.
Sign him.
See, there's a term for all of this. It goes on in the NBA. It goes on in the NBA.
Speaking of the T?
It's called tanking.
Yes.
And that's what the Tigers have done now the last couple of years, and it's only going to get worse this year. It can't get better.
There's no way it can get better.
We have a double-A, triple-A baseball team.
In fairness, this is the way the game has become when you build a payroll up and you're forced to start all over again because you can't sustain. Okay, so the other day, I'm doing a show with Drew and Mike here in Drew's studio, which we are, and we had Kirk Gibson on the phone, and you know, I was
dropping names again, Bob.
I was kind of sympathizing because it's hard.
Like, you actually know Kirk Gibson?
I've met him a few times.
We all have, just a few times.
I met him when he was a wide receiver at Michigan State. What's he done since?
I covered him.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was sympathizing with him because it's hard to cover a crappy team. The only time I worked for a team was the Pistons, and trust me, when they were good, it was fun. When they were bad, it was awful trying to be a PR man for a team that's going nowhere, and all the players are disgruntled and ripping on the coach, and it was as ugly as can be. So I said to Gibby, you know, isn't it deflating? You get to the bottom of the ninth, you know, you got bases loaded, and you got a AAA player coming to the plate instead of J.D. Martinez, and you have to make it sound like they still have a chance to win the game. So I said, or is it something else when you rebuild like the Tigers are? Here's what Gibby said.
It's an exciting process. The Tigers went through a period of time where they went a go at it. They were very successful in the playoffs. They were in two World Series. It didn't work. So, you know, they had to regroup and they had to rebuild, and they're going a different direction. So to me, you know, things just don't happen where, you know, the Yankees maybe will be different than Detroit. The Tigers, who had a huge payroll, they went for it. It didn't work out. They traded Prince Fielder. They're still paying for him. They traded Verlander. They're paying for him. But, you know, they had to make those moves, which maybe didn't seem like smart because you're trading away good players. But down the road, it will be. It will give them the flexibility. And I think, you know, when Tram and Jack and Peaches and Tommy Brookins and Lance Parrish, Dave Rosma, Jack Morris, when those guys came up, you know, they stunk too for a while, and, you know, it's just kind of, we're in the process of assembling the young talent. Personally, for me, I would play all my young talent. Like what happened in 2003, we lost 119 games. What happened after that? It came together very quickly.
There's no one that implied that these guys that are waiting to get to the big leagues and guys who have played a little bit in the big leagues have got the talent, the crew that he just named. Number one.
The Astros did it, but not everybody can.
Number two, I knew this was going to happen. This man, Mr. Gibson, has now turned into the number one booster
disclaimer
for the Detroit Tigers. I think it's reprehensible.
That's what I was going to say, a disclaimer. He works for the Detroit Tigers.
Right.
This is like you guys calling up George Blaha and asking what he thinks about the direction of the Detroit Pistons. Are you serious?
Wait a minute. Okay, I'm not denying that. In defense, he's doing his job. I'm telling you that when I did it for the Pistons, it was so tough, I stopped doing it because you can't make a bunch of lazy bums or talentless guys seem good when they're not, and yet that is your job to do.
So
I don't fault him for that. It's the job he has.
So the guy that tells more truth than anybody else at the Tigers now is Al Avila. They suck.
Well, that's right.
Right?
Danny, that's not a quote. I didn't see that he said we suck.
You want me to read what he said?
Yeah. Is that what he said?
No, he didn't say that.
Avila may be crushed any sprinklings of optimism with his blunt talk because he called him terrible and lousy. He predicted the Tigers' rebuild would take several more years.
He didn't say we suck.
And that means more seasons where the best players get traded. Listen to this now. Where the best players are going to get traded and the team ends up with a lot of starters from the Toledo Mud Hens. Now, you don't think you're saying the club sucks?
Then he says, hey,
he says, so many words, of course he does.
He says, then do we start spending now? Or is it 2021, 2022, or 2023? He says, I don't know. Maybe it's a gradual buildup. I can't say. But
this isn't the way you do this, Eli. You know, the thing about is that it drives me crazy. I don't know if you had a chance to see Wojo's column in the Detroit News. He compares the Tigers rebuild to the Wings rebuild. I've told Kenny Holland a number of times over the last few years when I've seen him, Kenny, you might be the best general manager in all four North American sports for what they've done. So what Kenny's doing is, of course, the Wings are bringing up some impressive-looking kids, whether it's Dennis Chalowski or Roenick, or who was just sent back to Grand Rapids, by the way, whatever you think. But he's also mixing in other veterans with him. So it's not so painful. Right. The Wings are respectable, despite their record. If you're going to do a baseball rebuild, Avila should have just got rid of everybody. Keep some of the older guys. Now start bringing in some kids.
You know why that doesn't work?
I'm going to tell you. You can't just blow up a team entirely 100%.
There was a time when Justin Verlander, before they traded him, it was a tie game, I think, or whatever. His decision was on the line. And as I said in a question to Gibby, instead of J.D. Martinez coming up with the bases loaded to give him a win, it was Jim Aducci, who's a AAA player. So here you got Justin Verlander, a blue blood, on the bench, trying to win, and you got a AAA player coming up. When you're a blue blood like Verlander or Cabrera, you are miscast in that situation. Your talents are being wasted, and players see the clock ticking, and they don't want to be there, and you can't blame them. The problem is, you pointed out in the article the other day where long-term free agent contracts are apparently going away.
They really are.
For that exact reason. Even Nick Castellanos, who's still young and only has had one really decent year, doesn't belong.
Trade him now.
He doesn't.
Trade him now, right? It's unbelievable.
Well, they're
trying to develop in a rebuild. You're trying to develop young players from your own system, like Nick Castellanos.
Bob, you're right.
Then he gets 26. He becomes a major league star. Trade him now for more prospects. Are you out of your mind?
Because he's in the wrong situation. And as a player, you don't want to be here. Now, when Denny played, you had no choice. Jim Price, not that he would have been a starter anywhere else, was stuck behind freehand for, 15 years?
Yeah.
Because they needed a backup catcher, and he didn't have a chance to go anywhere. Now players see the short window, the big money, and they say, why am I here? I need to achieve my goal. So, but it's tanking, and it's a shame that it's become legitimate to tank. When you tank a tennis match, you're suspended. You may not play for a year. You can't tank.
Tanking. Be careful about the players aren't tanking. But you're right. The organization is tanking.
Right.
And before Jim Price,
tanking should be illegal.
There was Mike Rourke, who played the same role for the Detroit Tigers.
Sure, sure.
He's a great defensive catcher. He just couldn't get out because of the reserve clause.
Right.
Price and Rourke couldn't stand up and say, I demand that you trade me. They'll say, screw you. Go home and pump gas for a living if you don't like it.
Right.
Well, Price would have had a tough time. This is one of the few clubs that Price could have played for. I mean, we had Bill Freehand and nobody else behind him, and you could have put Molly Putz behind Freehand because you're not going to play much anyway.
We had a guy 2 or 3 years ago that I predicted would be the Tigers' catcher for the next 12 to 15 years.
Ooh.
So McCann has a bad year
last year.
He had a bad year. So you throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah.
You just don't re-sign him. He has no value. Bring the kid back. Give him another chance.
I'm guilty of it, too. I thought he was going to be some player. I really did.
Absolutely.
And for them to do what they did is really unconscionable.
The integrity move, which I think was supposed to be implicit in all of sports, is you make your best effort to win.
Yes.
And it's become legitimate in baseball to say, we're not going to make our best effort to win for the next 4 years. We are going to make our best effort not to lose, but winning isn't what it's about right now. I thought the sickest thing, or the saddest thing last year, they were 36-37 at some point. And I'm listening, and I want to mention names, but there are guys on the sports station, and the people saying, you know what? Maybe we misjudge it. Maybe this team really can go somewhere. I go, are you people kidding? And sure enough, they went 28-60, I think, after that to finish with 64 wins on the year. So,
now, here's a pragmatic consideration about this, too, boys. I'm going to just use a personal thing for a moment. People are surprised, since I was on the New York Yankees broadcast for 10 years in New York, that I pay $120, whatever it is, so I can watch and I watch 140, I would say, every Detroit Tiger game in my New York City apartment. Now, I don't think I'm going to renew this year, and a lot of people aren't going to renew. So let's talk about tickets. How many people are going to be buying tickets to see the Tigers? How many people are going to be watching the Tiger broadcast and listening to Tiger radio casts? You're really playing with fire.
Yep.
When you embark on this kind of thing that Al Avila and Chris Illich have done.
Fans have a choice.
They will have lots of discounts for suites this year, lots of discounts for
sure.
seats to begin with, and all kinds of other things they're going to have going. And I'm talking about the merchandise in the ballpark. Bats and balls are going to go for about 50% of the dollar by August. you know, it's not going to happen much before the All-Star break, but you watch the fire sales that they have at the ball game.
Let's do a quick break, a one-minute spot here, and then we'll finish up with a couple of more topics we have. So, the Aldo Eye Center is our sponsor for the show. They've been with me for about 20 years. I got LASIK there 20 years ago.
Yeah, I'd like to get my eyes done.
You already had them done.
No, I only had one done.
Oh, well, then you need to get the other one
done.
Well,
I'm going to get my eyes done, too, as a matter of fact. Now, he's been telling me about this guy for a while. Yeah. And then you know what else you said? One of the nicest people I've ever worked with in all my years in broadcasting was the now legendary WRIF disc jockey, Karen Savelli.
Mm-hmm.
And so I Google this guy, and here's Karen, you know, on television, on the internet. I think it actually airs on regular TV in Detroit, too. Karen's going off about, this guy saved my eyesight. I couldn't see anything. And now it's amazing. So this guy must have something.
Well, you know.
He must be doing something.
In her case, she had cataracts. So the point is people get used, they settle for bad vision. The glasses are scratchy, contacts, you get by. And so Karen was nearly blind. She knew something was wrong, but she put up with years of bad. And though she goes in there and she's got these serious cataracts, she takes them out. They get taken out. She's got incredible vision now, multifocal lens implants. They've come so far in the last few years. She's reading this tiny little type, and she goes, wow, I didn't know Kleenexes were so white. I didn't know printer paper was so right. So you get this yellowing Yaldo's just the best. He's on 30,000 custom LASIK procedures. That's for people 45 and under. The multifocal implants are amazing. I got them last November 17.
That's what I want to get.
I see everything up close. I see everything far away, crystal clear. And if you get the surgery, the multifocal implants, you never will get cataracts. So call 248.
Much pain?
Zero pain.
No pain?
No pain at all. Wait, 800-398-EYES, 800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. The evaluation is free. And by the way, everybody should get an eye exam every 2 years. You could get macular degeneration, who knows, and your regular insurance pays for it.
Take a memo to dentist Dale McLean for me. Again, he's missing all this great stuff about Sparky Anderson. Danny, I want to remind you what Sparky said, and I quote, pain don't hurt. End quote. Remember when Sparky said that pain don't hurt?
I do.
Isn't that like truth is not truth, which is what Giuliani said? Anyway, let's talk a little about Big Ten basketball, okay? We have a few minutes left here on the show, and I watched.
I believe you're referring to Big 13 plus Rutgers basketball. There is no more Big Ten.
That's true. And Michigan State, it's – as good as they are, they got off to a horrible start yesterday against Purdue.
The Purdue game you're talking about, they lost Purdue on the road.
You shoot 3 for 15, and you turn the ball over five times. So the Big Ten is tough, and Michigan got its loss. Michigan State got its loss, and
there are going to be more losses than that. Michigan lost at Wisconsin. Big Ten, Big 13 plus Rutgers, ACC, any of the major conferences. It's hard to win on the road. It's really hard to win on the road. It's Michigan State's a better team than Purdue, and Michigan's a better team than Wisconsin, but they were on the road. I thought Michigan State would lose to Iowa at Iowa, but they didn't. That surprised me a little bit.
Yeah. And I think I give Michigan State an advantage because they're going to play Michigan twice now. It's going to be very revealing,
That's going to be so
it's
going to
be
fun.
I think they end the season by playing each other also.
Yeah, it's like the last 2 weeks of the 10 days of the season.
But there's so much more to go. I was not upset to see, even though I'm a Michigan guy, to see him lose. Not upset to see what happened to State yesterday because the important stuff is yet to come. And having whether you finish the season 30-2 or 27-5 doesn't really matter. But State's got more depth than Michigan, and that's what worries me about the Wolverines. They've only got 7 guys.
It always appears that State has got more depth. I think they also have a better coach, and I don't say that in a negative way. But I just
I don't know about that.
Michigan State, he can coach.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that John's a better coach than Tom. John Beilein's one of the greatest coaches in America. And Izzo has to be up there, too, obviously.
Izzo's in the Hall of Fame, which is...
Yeah, I mean, Izzo is in the Hall of Fame. I mean, doesn't that count for something?
It does, and John is going to be there, too. They're already talking about that.
Possibly.
Great. Tom Izzo is a great coach. But I said this the other day, and I've said this all along to people. If I had a son or a grandson who was a great high school basketball player to the point that Michigan and Michigan State recruited him.
Yeah.
Do you want to send him to East Lansing and get a inferior education to the education he'd get in Ann Arbor? And I can say that. I'm a Michigan State graduate.
I don't know if that's true.
And do you want to send him to a little.
It's not true.
I got it. Listen, I got a granddaughter.
You want to send him to play for a little guy who's screaming and embarrassing him on national TV all the time, or
Bob,
do you want him to play for John Beilein?
That's really unfair to call an education at Eastern substandard. Come on.
I didn't know. Eastern. I backed off that. I said it's East. It's I said East Lansing. I think is what you mean to say. Yeah. I said I did. I didn't mean to say substandard. Okay. I misspoke. Right. But a Michigan State degree is not what a Michigan degree is worth. And that's just a fact of life. And if some my fellow Michigan State graduates don't like it, tough. Just is what it is.
They didn't go there to get a degree, though. They went there to play basketball. I can't.
Well, of course.
I bet there isn't a single person on either team, a player, who said, I'm going to take this school over that because my degree in
sociology.
There
or,
are certain kids, believe it or not, who are student athletes and who do.
I agree.
There are some. Yeah. Yes, there are.
I'm not sure how many are playing football though.
But I'm not so sure that Izzo's a better coach than Beilein. I think Beilein is getting every bit the recognition that.
But look at the track records. Look at the track records. Take the last 5, 7, 8, 9 years, and
John's been
to
two Final Fours in the last, seven, eight, two national championship games.
He's had
games,
a
Bizzo
the last 4 or 5
two
years
national
too.
Championship games.
My guy's in the Hall of Fame.
All right.
Excuse me. Well, Danny, we're not denigrating Tom Izzo, please. I mean, as I say, I love Tom, I think he's a great coach, and he's done wonders for Michigan State. But all I'm saying is I don't like the way he coaches. If that's my son that you just pulled out of the game because he made a mistake and the whole country's watching on national TV and your veins are popping and you're in his face screaming at my son because the kid just made a mistake, I don't like that.
You mean
that's
to
not
tell,
the way John
Beilein
operates.
So what's the difference? Guy hangs a curveball and they pull him out of a ball game. Do you get upset about that, too, with the baseball
coach? Did Mayo
coach?
Smith ever get in your face and scream at you when he gave up a
home run?
Of
course he did. Of course he did.
Well,
and he'd come out there and say, how's your stuff? How's your stuff? How's your stuff? And I'd say, what do you mean how my stuff is? I said, ask Freehan. Freehan would say, how the hell would I know? I haven't caught anything yet.
You know, Bob, so the point you're making, which has some validity a little bit, is that to humiliate a 19-year-old on national television isn't very attractive.
I don't like it.
But
I agree with that to some degree. But you know what? What also I don't like is a 40-year-old, 45-year-old man taking advantage of a 19-year-old kid because he can.
Exactly. Because it's college sports and he can do that. But in fact, it's really professional sports. And the fact that he's 19 years old and goes to school is one thing, but coaches coach the way they do.
Right.
And they're very emotional. A lot of them are. A lot of screaming does go on and finger pointing. And there's probably 3 or 4 coaches in the Big Ten. The guy at Penn State, whose name escapes me right now,
I got news for you about that guy. He ain't going to be around too much longer either. Not only is he that way, you're right, but he can't coach, and Penn State basketball is horrible. And what happened in that situation, you guys should know this, is that the Big Ten made an unholy deal with Penn State. They went to Penn State and said, boy, we really want your football money. Would you like to join our conference even though you have no right to be in it and don't belong? And Penn State said, you know what we want to do? We want to develop big-time basketball programs and hockey programs just like yours. So, yeah, it's a ridiculous alliance. They have no business being in the Big Ten. But here they are all these years later.
Yeah, Pat Chambers is his name, right? And,
yes.
And Archie Miller from Indiana says publicly, the fight isn't there, the confidence isn't there. There's nothing we're doing well.
Kids,
no, but I think in the pros, you're a little more careful when you talk about publicly about guys that are making $15 million a year and can get you fired. What do you think of Braz Dacus? He's kind of a villain, Michigan's Aryan Nation looking forward there.
Be careful with that stuff.
I'm just saying.
Be careful, especially as a Jew. You should know better than that.
He's just got the look, and I really love. But he likes being the villain, and it's interesting. Maybe he's a lame beer type, one of those guys where when he's with us, that's great, but when you're the opposition, you kind of get a little angry at him for being a show off putting his fingers in it with the money and everything.
People do change their clothes.
What does that mean?
Basketball. Whatever he does when he leaves the court, they change clothes.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose you can talk about the hockey enforcers that way, certainly, as well. Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I love Michigan basketball and grew up a huge Michigan fan. I still, to this day, watch virtually every Michigan basketball game, so I think I know what I'm talking about here. Iggy is just an outstanding two-way player. He's a tough rebounder. He's strong. This guy's going to be a star in the NBA. He will be a star. He's, you know, I think the best player on that team, with apologies to Jordan Poole, of course. And those two guys might be the best players on either team, with apologies, you know, as we know, to, you know, the Michigan State's own point guard. I think Iggy is a terrific player. I will never understand why he got 0 points in that recent game. Was it
Wisconsin, wasn't it?
Where he got 0 points. But he's – my God, he's just a boy.
I know.
He's just a freshman.
He's at least a couple of years away from being an NBA player. I like his aggressiveness. Guys that are just willing to put their head down and go to the hoop and always looking for an opportunity to drive. I like him. Tough.
I always laugh a little bit when somebody starts talking about the NBA going – and this kid's going to be a star in the NBA. I mean, I don't even know if we can define the NBA anymore. I mean, who the hell is playing in the NBA anymore? I mean, the NBA used to – well, we used to have Wilt Chamberlains and Magic Johnson. We used to have all those guys. We don't have anybody in the NBA except one or two
guys.
Well,
we got a guy named James Harden.
But those are West Coast guys. We got Kevin Durant.
Yeah, you got LeBron James.
We got a lot of West Coast guys.
You got the freak for Milwaukee, who's his
– a guy named LeBron James, by the way, is still playing in the NBA last time I looked.
I disagree with you on that. There's some –
I'm a big NBA guy. I watch a lot of NBA.
Russell Westbrook.
You're one of the 52 people that watch.
I like the NBA. No,
that's
I watch
nonsense.
That.
Their ratings are gangbusters.
They are not.
Roof.
Don't you try to sell that
like
one.
It.
You're going to start talking like Willie Horton.
When you played basketball going up in Chicago, it was a two-hand set shot, and they blew the whistle when the ball went into the peach basket after every hoop and had a center jump.
And
that's
you know
why
what?
You don't like it.
And you know what? That's true.
On that note,
I used to have the greatest two-hand set shot you've ever seen, except for one guy. Lou Boudreau, my father-in-law.
I didn't know he was a great basketball player. Boudreau was?
Check his history at the University of Illinois. He All-American.
I didn't know that. You guys also mentioned, we mentioned Dick Groat the other day.
Yep.
My parents both
graduated. He was a basketball player.
Dick Groat was an All-American basketball player at Duke.
Besides being a baseball star. Nice guy, too, by the way.
I just remember.
Still alive, 92, still broadcasting the games.
Remember somebody telling me when I was a kid that he always wore his hat very tight. He didn't want it to fly off because he was bald underneath it. Anyway, gentlemen, good show. Enjoyed it. We'll do it again on Thursday. So I hope out there you will listen and you'll tune in for that one. I don't know that'll be.
We'll give everybody our picks, and our picks are in gold.
Right, and we'll do it again on Thursday at our age, only if Allah so wills it. A lot of stuff can happen between now and Thursday to three old men.
Boy, isn't that the truth?
We'll see you all then.
And keep those streams going, boys.